Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special post-game edition of the VR Podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jared Brugger, with my co-host, Corey Geiger, who was at the game at Beaver Stadium today. Corey, tell me what you thought about Penn State's play today.
Hey, you know what, Jared? First and foremost, it was just great to see fans back at Beaver Stadium. 105,000. Last year was crazy, man. Last year was, it was just eerie going to the stadium. You and I have talked about this. Just going to an empty 100,000 seat stadium and seeing almost nobody there. So really, I mean, we can get to the game, and I'm not sure a whole lot of Penn State fans truly, you know, want to dive deep into what we saw against Ball State, but we will. But man, just this was college football. This was normal. We keep talking about the return to normal, Jared, and we kind of keep getting closer and closer, more return to normal. This just felt like what we're used to seeing in college football.
No, you know, I see all over social media, whether it was Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, just the crowd and just that atmosphere. And that's what makes college football so great. You know, the tailgating, just the pomp and circumstance of college football and games in Happy Valley. It's a special experience. And, you know, seeing a stadium packed like that is a sight to be seen. And it's a sight to really cherish and see after that last year. Now, did they have any cardboard cutouts in the stadium today?
I don't think so. I think all the seats were filled. But let me throw this out too, because Jared coaches high school football too. And you mentioned pomp and look, at the high school and collegiate levels, football is about community, passion, spirit, joy. The NFL is a business. And don't get me wrong, NFL fans are wild, but the NFL is an entity in and of itself. High school football is about communities. It's about bringing your local community together, and it's the biggest thing in town. College football is all of that and a lot more because you have, you know, way more people. But that's what we saw. I mean, that's what was really missing last year. It was just so bizarre. And I think Penn State, it really hurt Penn State last year, Jared. We talked about this on our preseason podcast, that when you're used to having 100,000 people in the stands, I think it really hurt Penn State last year as much as any program in the country to not have anybody, because you just feed off of that. And so when we talk about getting back to normal, that's really what it was, not only for the football players and coaches, but for the fans. I heard from a lot of people. I kind of arrived late to the stadium today. My kid was playing a baseball scrimmage this morning, but I know a lot of my friends that were tailgating up there and just told me, hey, this is what we missed the most, was just this whole atmosphere of getting out there, having fun, tailgating, and the whole shebang.
No, and that's a really good point, because, you know, last year at Beaver Stadium, you saw all the empty seats and the S zone was cardboard cutouts. And at the end of the season, there was snow, but there aren't very many steel bleachers or aluminum bleachers that are causing false starts like crowds can do. And yeah, the crowd is a factor. And when you have 105,000 people connected in a stadium like Beaver Stadium or throughout the country, that makes an impact both in the adrenaline from the home team and the nerves from the away team. And with a team like Ball State coming to town, obviously, you know, I think it was the second time on the broadcast, what I heard, the second time they played in a crowd that big. They played at the Big House a few years ago. It's just so much different. And obviously with it being the first game back and over 650 days, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. And that's just the stadium part. That's not the entire community, because you did mention
right. The
community aspect of it. And
hey, the community part, Jared, that's what, I mean, State College is a small town, but it becomes the third largest city in Pennsylvania for Penn State weekends. And that is a huge, huge, it's the identity. And again, folks, for those that care, we'll break down the football game in a minute, but I just don't know that a lot of people care about us breaking down Penn State versus Ball State. The community aspect of what that football program means to State College, to Center County, to this entire region. I mean, it's on display today, and it's just good to have it back.
No, and it's great that we brought up the community aspect, because we talk about high school football and the bands and the tradition, but high school football doesn't bring money to the community like college football does. College football is a business, and State College was hurting. Downtown State College was hurting last year because there was no traffic. Game days were just so different and so, you know, unique last year. It was just a deserted town, and Penn State makes State College. It makes it what it is, both in size and the uniqueness of the community. Because if you've ever been to Penn State, and judging by the fact that you're listening to this podcast, you probably have. You drive up on 99 or wherever you're coming from, and you go from nothing, 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 boom, Penn State, nothing, nothing, nothing. It's kind of a stadium, and just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so special. And this is great, not only just for the program and for college football and the NCAA and whatever, but it's great for these small communities throughout the country, not just in State College.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Really well said. And if you're doing that, head on over to 99. Come on over and see us in Altoona, our little town, not too far away from State College. But you know what? There was a football game, 44-13. This was, to me, if we were going to script out the game, Jared, this, and a lot of times you think you kind of know what's going to happen and then it doesn't happen. And you're like, okay, wonder what happened there. This game played out to script to me, to Penn State. What they wanted to do was get a lead, take control, work on the things you need to work on, i.e. the running game, the offensive line, get a bunch of backups in the game. We all knew that was the game plan going in. And wouldn't you know it, they get up 14-0 after two possessions. Offense looking good, defense in control. And it's exactly what we were able to see, Jared. They got a lot of backups in the game. They scored a bunch of points. They probably could have hung a 60 on Ball State. They scored 44 points. And basically the entire third quarter, they were just, you know, going to the running game, even in passing situations. So this game really was exactly the kind of tune-up that, you know, James Franklin and his coaches would have wanted.
No, and that's what makes games like this matter. Obviously, starting the season at Wisconsin, Penn State had the ball for 16 minutes in a game against an elite program, right? And this week, they completely changed that script. Obviously, Ball State and Wisconsin aren't in the same ballpark. But against the Ball State, you can go out and execute your game plan, really fine-tune some things because – and this is something we're going to get to a little bit later in this podcast is, guess what? Auburn's coming to town, and Auburn's no slouch. But, you know, you go out and you get Clifford into a rhythm. You get, you know, Noah Cain into a little bit of a rhythm. Probably could have liked to see a little bit more yards per carry. You know, you get Taquan Roberson into the game. That's the stuff that matters. And that's the stuff when they struggled last year, they didn't get to do. And that's the thing that really makes a team better. It's not about your ones. It's about your twos, threes, and fours. The ones that need to step up when somebody gets injured and somebody's ejected due to a targeting call or this, that, or the other thing.
And that is exactly what they wanted to see today. They wanted to get the offensive line work. In run blocking, they wanted to get the running backs. They had 48 carries today, 48 rushes today for 240 yards. That's good. And let me get back real quick. I'm here's the thing, buddy. I'm delaying analyzing this game too much, quite frankly, because I just don't think it's worth it in a lot of ways. But Jared, you were busy with the Pirates all night Saturday. As we're taping this, folks, about an hour ago, Jacksonville State beat Florida State. Now, by the time you're listening to this, you're probably going to know Jacksonville State is an FCS team. They lost last week to UAB 31-0. UAB just lost to Georgia today like 56-7, okay? Jacksonville State goes in and beats Florida State on a 50-something yard Hail Mary in the last second. And the reason I bring that up, Jared, is because this game went to script for Penn State. This was the tune-up game, the cupcake game that everybody kind of thought. But, you know, Jacksonville State should have been that cupcake game to Florida State. You know why it wasn't? Because Florida State's players probably still hung over from an overtime loss to Notre Dame last week, probably overlooked the FCS team, probably disrespected that team. And why is all of this important? Because we kind of like to poke fun at James Franklin a little bit for his 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. Well, his tweet used to be, you know, Ball State, Ball State, Ball State. He'd repeat the opponent 40 times in his tweet. And we found out why this week that James has changed his tweet to 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. It's become comical to us, Jared. It's become kind of silly. And we look at James Franklin and we just kind of got to roll our eyes because we've seen it all the time. You're not going to see Penn State lose to Jacksonville State. That's the bottom line. You're not going to see Penn State come in and take anybody lightly. Now, sure, Penn State will lose some games. Penn State will have some bad plays, and they'll lose to somebody they maybe shouldn't lose to every now and then. But it's not going to be on a damn 50-yard Hail Mary to an FCS team that lost 31-0 the week before. Why is that, Jared? Why do you think that is? Because for some of the peccadilloes that you can pinpoint to James Franklin, you know, having a tough time beating ranked teams on the road, some bad play calls during games, Penn State's ready to play against every opponent every week. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. When you see some of the things that happen around the rest of college football, some teams sleepwalking against opponents, when you consider Florida State just lost to Jacksonville State, that's the one thing, man, that we don't see from this Penn State program. Because I do think James Franklin prepares these guys for that 1-0 mentality and to respect every opponent.
No, and that's and he does, and I think that's what makes coaching so great. And you talk about it all the we talk about this in coach speak all the time. You know, you only focus on the game that's ahead of you, because if you don't, if you overthink it, right? And with Florida State, without being in that locker room, without being on in those meeting rooms, they lose a heartbreaker to Notre Dame. Mackenzie Milton.
Yep.
Has an incredible game. Comes back, nearly had his leg amputated. Comes back, wills the Seminoles into the game. They nearly beat Notre Dame. Is there a letdown that next week? Absolutely. Notre Dame is a premier college football program throughout the country. And obviously, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not the biggest Notre Dame fan. You know, it's hard to find Notre Dame and Penn State fans that kind of mesh. But listen, that's coaching, right? That's, you have to be ready to go every single game. And yeah, is playing Jacksonville State a letdown after playing Notre Dame and losing to them in overtime? Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, nobody cares about Jacksonville State, and so be it. Same thing with, you know, with other games. That's why these teams have this game. But the best thing about this for Jacksonville State is they come in, they play at Florida State, they collect their check, and they collect a win in the win column. And that's going to springboard them.
Oh my gosh.
Into the rest of the season. But, you know, speaking of Notre Dame, they didn't handle Toledo very well today either.
That's a good point. And again, it's just part of being ready every week. And just one last thing, we'll recap more of the Penn State game in our next segment here, but just to wrap up this segment, I'm 47. I grew up with Florida State being a top five team every year. Bobby Bowden, just, you know, legendary coach. Rest in peace. But that program, you just knew what you were going to get. I cannot for the life of me understand how Florida State has fallen into the abyss like it has. Mike Norvell, their new coach, I think he's 3-8 now. I mean, to lose to Jacksonville State on a Hail Mary, that is as humiliating. That's Appalachian State, Michigan, Jared. That is as humiliating as it gets. And I know Penn State's been through some dark years in 03 and 04, and there have been bad losses. But, man, can you imagine being a storied program with phenomenal tradition and then falling into the abyss like Florida State has.
Yeah, and those early 2000s Penn State teams were not good. And even at their lowest, even at the program's lowest through all the sanction years, they were still an 8-7 program.
Sure.
You know, and that's with minimal scholarships. They lost, of course, to Ohio, which is a fun fact. I had about three or four teammates that I played in high school football with on that team that they came into Happy Valley and beat Penn State. And
give them a shout out. Was there a Futrell and a win?
Yes, Futrell, Wynn, Alfonso Lewis.
That's right.
I think that was it. Three or four.
Did they have a Hollingsburg kid on that team, or just the three?
I think so
kids?
Too. I think so.
I remember that. For us folks in Altoona, that's some local pride on that Ohio team.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent opportunity, and you know, I think it's huge. But the big thing is, you have to be ready to go no matter where you're playing, who you're playing. And if you're not, that's on the coaches. I mean, I'm looking at some of these scores here today from this game. Arkansas hung 40 on Texas. Yeah. Texas is ranked number 15 in the country. Iowa beats Iowa State, which we'll get to later. You know, and this is what I love about Nick Saban, the defender of the dark arts, right? He's one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest college football coach of all time. And he rips his players into media, knowing that that's going to wake them up, because guess what? You can't wait until you lose if you're Alabama. Like, then the target's on your back. The target's on your back if you're Alabama, no matter when it is. But if you'd go out and you don't play well, he's going to rip you a new one before you get to that loss and wake you up. And that's what makes him so great. You know, then you go in, you look at Oregon. They beat Ohio State today, the Fighting Joe Moorheads. And, you know, you just got to be ready, because college football, man, anybody can beat you on any given day. And that's what makes the game so great.
And we are going to get to the Ohio State and Iowa stuff here in a minute. We'll take a break. Jared can leap into the break, but we will break down some of the things we saw from Penn State against Ball State, and just what we think about this Penn State team going into the Auburn game next week.
All right, we'll be right back here on the We Are Podcast and DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. We'll catch you here in a few minutes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to the We Are Podcast and the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Say that 10 times fast. Hey, listen, Ball State is Ball State, Corey, but here we are. Penn State is 2-0 leading into Auburn next week. They have to be feeling fairly decent about themselves.
Hey, look, the offense came out and started fast. It's really one of the things that I have been most critical of during James Franklin's tenure. We've seen a lot of the slow, sluggish, sleepwalking starts. Not the case today. The offense came out, boom, touchdown, boom, touchdown. I thought Mike Yurcich was really on his game early on. The play calling was good. It was appropriate. It was balanced. They went under center a handful of times. Jared.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was. I don't think we saw a fullback, but they did go under center. And Neil Riddell from the Altoona Mirror, of course, had to ask James Franklin about going under center. And so, James, there was a little bit of a comic relief there in the post game. But it is. Mike Yurcich is going to do a lot of different things. When it going under center, using the tempo, the first two drives, they came out and just methodically moved right down the field. And that's what you truly want to see The offense kind of bogged down a little bit after that for a while, but that's what I was talking about earlier, Jared. That early lead allowed Penn State to really start to work on some other things after getting off to the fast start. Like 10 guys caught passes today. It was just a really impressive all-around performance. And it all started to me with the early scores, because that allowed Penn State to really dictate what they wanted to do the rest of the day.
No, and that's and it's high tempo, up tempo offense. You have to start according to your script, and you can't go 3-and-out. Penn State did that way too many times against Wisconsin. It does nothing to help you if you're 3-and-out and your offense is not on the field. Up tempo, you got to be moving the football, you got to be moving the sticks, and you've got to be doing something. And that's the thing, man. If you don't do that, you hang a lot of people out to dry.
The defense was also playing well, and that was good to see. And we expected that after the performance against Wisconsin, the defense played well, and it did very well again today. So Penn State had control of this game. And so then in the third quarter, what we saw was really exactly what I think James Franklin wanted to do. They wanted to come in, work on the running game. They made a concerted effort, especially in the third quarter. By the way, Sean Clifford completed 12 of his first 13 passes during that start, and that's what helped them get off to the fast start. But in the third quarter, they went to the running game. They got a lot of people involved with the offense. Noah Kane, 69 yards. Kevon Lee, 68 yards. Sean Clifford had 66 yards, including a 43-yard run. So they really mixed things up offensively. Meanwhile, the defense, you know, Ball State, to their credit, they can throw the ball a little bit. They got a very good quarterback in Plitt, who, you know, and they've got a nice little passing game. They could probably do some things against much lesser defenses than Penn State. But Penn State had control of this game. And in the third quarter, when they got the running game going, and then Jesse Luchetta comes up with a real, you know, kind of a big pick six, because the offense wasn't doing a lot at that point. That extended the lead, and then all of a sudden Penn State's able to continue to just put the backups in, put Taquan Roberson in, and finish the game the way they wanted to.
No, and that's a really good point, because, listen, getting to your subs in a game like this is exactly what you need, and that's exactly what they're going to hope to do against Villanova here in a few weeks. But if you can get out and control the game and control the tempo and really do your thing and keep Ball State off the field. Like, they got 295 total yards, 69 rushing yards, and 226 passing yards. So the defense for Penn State, you know, they held them to 13 points. And there just are not teams scoring against Penn State right now. And obviously, we were through two games, and Wisconsin was physically inept in the red zone against Penn State last week. But, you know, that's a credit to Penn State and Brent Pry. You know, you hold them to two scores, really. You have a touchdown, and then obviously 6 points in the first half, two field goals, whatever. But it's just one of those situations where, hey, you come out and you do your thing, and that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, they could have won this game by 50 points. It was 44-13. Penn State could have scored 60. But they worked on the things they needed to work on. And I do want to get to Taquan Roberson, because he came in, played the last 8 minutes or so. The first series didn't go well. It was a 3-and-out, and he missed a pass and got tackled on third down. But they gave him another series. And it was important, because they let him throw the ball once. They could have just come in and just handed off. But with about 2.5 minutes to go, they let Taquan Roberson roll out, throw a touchdown pass to Theo Johnson. That was Roberson's first career completion in college. And you got to think what that will do for that young man's confidence. Now, let me say this, aside from Villanova in 2 weeks, I don't really want to see Taquan Roberson again. Okay. Because that means that Sean Clifford is healthy and playing well, and things are going the right way. But if we do have to see Taquan Roberson, Jared, just getting 6, 7, 8 snaps, throwing a touchdown pass in college, I think that's the kind of thing that just continues to help him get those butterflies out of the way in case he is needed at some point.
No, and that's huge, because guess what? You and I could go out there and run an offense and hand the ball off 5 times, But getting him to play the game and play the offense and run the offense, I think is integral, because if you don't, you're not doing anybody a service, because if he's not able to go out and run the offense the way that he can, you know, and that you need him to, when Sean Clifford gets hurt or goes down or is inconsistent, then you are back to square one, because you just don't know what you're going to get from Roberson or anybody. So getting him that valuable experience is huge moving forward, because now guess what? They are able to do their thing, and they have a guy that they can start building their confidence in running the offense in case something goes wrong.
Yep. No question. And so what did we learn about Penn State over these 2 weeks with Auburn coming into town? Well, I would say this, we learned that Mike Yurcich can do some different things offensively. We learned that they'll take the deep shots. We learned that the offensive line, I think, pass protects pretty well. Beyond that, I think it's hard to say with a lot of certainty that we truly know what Penn State's going to be able to do against an Auburn or an Iowa or another good team. Because, again, this was a tune-up game today. That's why I think next week against Auburn, man, we're all looking forward to it. An SEC team, a wideout, ESPN's College Game Day is going to be there. I just love going into these kind of games, two marquee programs. I can't wait for next Saturday, Jared. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun.
No, I'm excited, and obviously the plan is for me to be back in the stadium too. So I'm excited to see a whiteout. I'm excited to just hear the crowd again and just hear just the pomp and circumstance, like we talked about in the first segment, because there's nothing quite like a Beaver Stadium whiteout, no matter what it might be. And it's a special experience. You know, the press box is going to be shaking up and down, when it might actually collapse. We just don't know. And the whole stadium, when it shakes, man, it's just crazy. But yeah, Auburn's coming to town, and Auburn's no slouch either. I understand that obviously they have a new coaching staff, but at the same time, the Tigers are a pretty good challenge for out of the SEC.
Yeah, there's no question. It's not a traditional power Auburn, and we'll see what they're going to do with their new coach. They've got an experienced quarterback in Bo Nix. They won 62-0 today against Alabama State. I'm not sure you can take anything out of that, but they'll have the team speed. They'll have highly recruited guys on both sides of the ball. It'll be a good matchup. But again, the wideout, we've just seen it for years and years against Ohio State, against Michigan, against some other team. I mean, the wideout is just a special thing. And I think it's going to be a blast.
No, and that's the thing. If there is a visiting team in the non-conference schedule that's prepared or close to being prepared for a whiteout, it would be Auburn. What the crowds that they deal with in the SEC are far and away better than anything you're going to see in the MAC, anything you're going to see anywhere else. So there's that. But they haven't been challenged this year. I mean, looking at the scores, Auburn beat Akron 60-10. They beat Alabama State 62-0. What can you take away from that? Hey, they score points, and they score points at will. But Akron and Alabama State aren't Penn State by any means. So I don't think that they're going to score or hang 60 at Beaver Stadium. But I think it's a good challenge for everybody. It's a night game. And, you know, this is going to be their biggest game in front of a crowd in quite some time, a crowd quite like this. And, you know, they're playing an hour earlier. Well, although it doesn't really matter because it's 7:30, it's a night game. But, you know, it's a longer trip coming from Alabama to Penn State.
Hey, this is what college football is all about, man. I can't wait to see it. I do think they're going to have to turn the offense loose. Auburn's going to score some points. This is not going to be, you know, I don't think anyway, knock on wood, I don't think you're going to hold them to 17 or 20 points. They're going to score some points. We know Penn State can score points with the deep ball. Penn State's going to have to sustain some drives, get something out of the running game. Cause maybe some of this is wishful thinking, just like I had hoped to see this against Wisconsin. I think this is going to be a game where both of these teams can get close to 30. And so, you know, Penn State's going to have to get to 30 perhaps to win. Cause I do think Auburn's going to come in and score some points.
No, and I think so too. I think Bo Nix is a very good quarterback. It's probably the best quarterback that they've seen this season. I mean, Mertz was, and obviously
he was lousy.
Yeah. And you know, hey, guess what? Let's see what they've got. And this is, I think the way that the schedule is built for Penn State this year is intriguing, because you start out with a challenge. You have your tune-up game against Ball State, and then you bring in Auburn. Then you got your tune-up game And then it's just, it's a very intriguing thing. It's getting into conference play, but you know, they're 2-0, and that's, I think, the best thing right now, because some people, not me, obviously, thought that they could be 1-1 going into this game. So, you know, it's a good setup for right now. And, but you know, college football, you got to be ready to play every day, and you got to be able to come in and prepare for Auburn, because Auburn's going to be fired up, you know, big crowd, atmosphere, under the lights. Game day is in Happy Valley next week. It's going to be a really cool environment. And I think that's exactly what college football needs and what this country needs. You know, this week was a dark week. It's a dark weekend. You know, we saw September 11th celebrations and ceremonies all the way. And I don't think that celebrations is really the right word there, but you know, it's a somber occasion. But next week, Penn State's going to welcome Auburn to town, and the pomp and circumstances that make college football great are going to be on full display. And I think that's exactly what this nation needs, and exactly what this community and this Commonwealth need as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And we're going to take another break here. We're going to look at Ohio State, Iowa, and the Big Ten, and just, man, there's some interesting storylines right now after some of these games these first 2 weeks.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of the We Are Podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Myself, Jared Prugar, along with Corey Geiger. We mentioned and alluded to in the second segment that the Big Ten is wild right now. And if you're under a rock, and I hope that you're not, because your cell service would probably be terrible if you're listening to this on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. Oregon upsets Ohio State. They come to the Midwest. Not quite sure how Ohio is in the Midwest, but that's a story for another day. But they come in, go up, win 35-28, and really dominate the Buckeyes for a majority of the game. And that's not the characteristic Ohio State team that we've seen. Now, if you go back to week one and when they played Minnesota, Ohio State didn't look that great. But you would imagine with a big-time program like Oregon coming in, Ohio State would have been ready and would have been able to beat them. But that just wasn't the case.
Well, you just used to Ohio State winning those kinds of games, and quite frankly, Oregon losing those kinds of games. But, man, look, Ohio State threw for 460-70 yards, Jared. They had 620 yards of offense, and they scored 28 points at home. That's amazing. If you think about the offensive, I think they had 32 first downs. If you think about the numbers Ohio State put up offensively, to only be held to 28 points is shocking. And they give up 35. The defense, this is just not a typically great Ohio State defense right now. So here's where it's interesting, because there are some Penn State fans, probably a lot of Penn State fans, that are going to maybe disagree or not want to see my viewpoint where I'm coming from here. And that's okay. This is a good discussion. I think that's a bad thing for the Big Ten that Ohio State lost. Now, Penn State fans can be like, screw Ohio State. We want them to lose. You know, obviously, you know, anything bad that happens to Ohio State, you know, Penn State fans are probably happy about that. But I think this is a bad loss for the Big Ten, because, look, this, and there's a lot of season to go, but this at least changes the odds and the numbers a little bit that make it more possible, more plausible, that the Big Ten could get completely shut out of the college football playoff. Now, I'm not going to go through a ton of different scenarios, but basically, you know, if Penn State beats Iowa and loses to Ohio State by a couple points, and Ohio State's got one loss and Penn State's got one loss, well, Jared, Alabama's going to get in. If Georgia runs the table but only loses to Alabama, then Georgia could get in. If Clemson runs the table the rest of the way and their only loss is to Georgia, you got to figure Clemson's in. And so then you've got Ohio State with one loss, Penn State with one loss, probably Oklahoma, Oregon, maybe all battling for one spot. And so, again, who knows what's going to happen the rest of the way. But, again, if you're Penn State, you want to have a chance at an undefeated Ohio State team. That way, if you beat them, you can pound your chest and you've got everything going for you. I just think that if from the Big Ten standpoint, you don't want to be losing out of conference games, especially at home with your marquee program.
No, and that's a really good way to look at it because, yeah, Ohio State lost to Oregon. Now, how do they view that loss? Because, like, I've talked about this at length multiple times. Preseason rankings are fairly irrelevant, except for situations like this. Because how do you view a number 12 ranked Oregon team? How high are they, right? You know, Wisconsin was number 12 when Penn State beat them, and Wisconsin only fell just a few positions. But the saving grace for for the Big Ten is the rest of the season for Ohio State. If they're a one loss team, that's okay. But you know, what's going to be another thing to watch out for is where Penn State and Iowa are when they play here in about a month, because when that happens, Penn State has the potential to be in the top 10 and probably will be in the top 10 after this weekend of action. Obviously Iowa is going to move up because they beat the number 11 or 10th ranked team ninth team into the country. Sorry, my words are hard. It's getting pretty late here on the west side of the state. But, you know, and Penn State's going to come in and they're going to play a ranked Auburn team next week. So Penn State has the opportunity to be in the top eight by the time this is all said and done, or even higher. And Iowa has the same kind of thing. So how's that game going to go? And yeah, guess what? If Penn State goes to Kinnick and beats Iowa in a dominating fashion, now obviously we talk about looking ahead and that works. Okay, we're journalists. We're not the team. But it's just going to be one of those situations. How do they view this? How does this resume get looked at?
Look, Penn State's got everything in its favor. The win at Wisconsin really opened up a lot of doors.
Signature win.
Auburn. That's right. You beat Auburn. That's great. I was playing fantastic. They destroyed Indiana last week. They beat their rival Iowa State this week. So again, there are a lot of factors that come into play, and it's hard to just completely try to look ahead 2, 3, 4, 5. Who knows what's going to happen? COVID is still out there. Injuries are out there. There are a lot of things in play. But right now, the best team in the Big Ten is Iowa. The best team in the Big Ten is Iowa. I mean, I'll do a power poll here in the next day or two, probably. On the site, and I'm gonna have Iowa at number one, and I don't think there's any question about it because Ohio State just has not looked like itself. But again, and I know people may disagree because it's glad great Ohio State lost, but the Big Ten, as a league, you want to have as many outstanding programs as you can. And can a one-loss Ohio State team still get into the playoff? Sure. Could a one-loss Penn State team get into the play? If Penn State loses to Iowa, but then beats Ohio State and then goes on and wins a Big Ten title, could they get in? Sure. I'm just saying, though, that the math right now, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and then you got Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, USC, by the time this is over, they're probably going to lose to Stanford. You just have a lot of factors in play that the Big Ten would have been better off if Ohio State comes out with a win today.
No, and they obviously, you want your teams to win the premier games, the signature wins. But, you know, looking ahead at the potential of Penn State's resume, they can have, three signature wins going into Ohio State. You know, obviously you got to take care of business in every game. But I think if Penn State goes into Ohio State at Columbus, that and they're undefeated, I think that's a really good situation for Penn State to be in. But that's what they need to do to really, really make a push for the college football playoff. Because if they do that, things are going to happen. And we don't know how Ohio State's going to recover. I mean, that's a really tough start to the schedule for Ohio State. You know,
here's what I'd be worried about. I'd be worried about Ohio State getting pissed now. And again, Jared, they lost and they've got issues defensively. 620 yards of offense, 470 yards passing. Penn State hasn't seen that. And again, I know we're looking way ahead. I can totally see Ohio State, just like when they lost to Virginia Tech the one year and they come back like gangbusters. I can see Ohio. I just have so much respect for what that program does. I tend to think they're going to be okay just because they typically are.
Well, and the Ohio State offense is okay, but they've been playing a lot of catch up football and come from behind football.
That's right.
And,
yep.
And you know, looking at the statistics from Minnesota, they gave up over 400 yards to the Golden Gophers, and the Golden Gophers are struggling this year too. So, I mean, the Ohio State defense needs to turn it up. Now they have a good schedule coming up, which is nice for them. Great. They play Tulsa and they play Akron. So those are two tune up games for them, but hey, listen, you got to come ready, and Penn State can have a, you know, they go on the road to Camp Randall, win. If they win at Iowa, I think that's huge. The yep. biggest signature win right now is if they beat Auburn at home. Everything else, I think, you know, when you look back and you look at the potentials for success for this Penn State team, and you look, let's say we come back at right before Christmas and Penn State's 11-1 or 10-1 or whatever, or 10-2, this could very well be James Franklin's best season at Penn State.
Again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. The 2016 team was a fantastic team with NFL stars on it, Godwin and Gesicki and Saquon. And again, I know we're thinking, you know, best case scenario here, but that's why as we wrap this up, Jared, when we do this in a week, we're going to have answers to these questions. If they come out and beat Auburn, and which they, I think they will, we're going to know a whole lot more about this team in a week. But the bottom line is, no matter what happens to anybody else, the schedule sets up for Penn State to control its own destiny. The Wisconsin, Iowa, how you got to control your own destiny. And if they do that, hey, this could be a good. But 2 weeks into this, I'm not gonna lie. I still have questions about this team. I still, you know, wonder what they're going to do when they run up against a quality defense.
Yeah, and they haven't seen that. I mean, the Wisconsin defense is pretty good, and the Wisconsin offense was equally as bad, but Penn State just wasn't clicking. Penn State hasn't played. Today was a pretty complete game, but it's Ball State. If they come out and play a complete game against Auburn, let's see where we're at, because that's going to be the telltale sign of how the season's going to go, because Indiana is not a good team this year, and I've not been able to see them play, but just looking statistically and looking at, you know, some of their last two games, they're just not a very good football team, which is, you know, they put up 56 against Idaho. So good for them. They beat a sack of potatoes, but you know, they lose to Iowa. They play number 7 Cincy. And then they have Western Kentucky before they play Penn State. You know, we talk about that momentum, that first game, they rode that momentum wave, you know, for the most part last season when they beat Penn State, and hopefully Penn State, you know, you hope that they continue to ride that momentum and that what they're doing with their wins so far. But that's, again, we get back to the beauty of college football. Every game matters, and just that confidence booster from Wisconsin, that confidence booster from going out and doing your thing against Ball State means the world right now for programs like Penn State, because now it's another week where they're preparing for Auburn. It's that 1-0 mentality. It's taking every game by storm. And you mentioned that by the time that this is over, Stanford will have beat USC. USC's kicker got ejected for targeting on the first play of the game. That's obviously not a big fact. I don't think that's, you know, too terribly of a factor, but that is absurd to me.
Yeah, as we speak, Stanford's pounding USC late Saturday night. Hey, we'll wrap this up with the momentum thing, Jared. We got a lot of good momentum on our podcast. I hope people are enjoying this. We try to have some fun with this and some good discussions and good breakdown and everything. I will admit, it's hard to break down a Penn State Ball State game because, again, I don't know that people are necessary. This was a fun festive day and a tune up for people to enjoy, but the. It starts for real next week. Auburn is going to be that's going to answer a lot of questions that we have. And if Penn State gets through that with a win, just like after beating Wisconsin, there will be a lot of opportunity to really start to look ahead and dream of your best case scenarios.
So it's going to be a whiteout at Penn State. Like we mentioned, College Game Day, it's going to be exactly what college football is all about in the community leading up to it. I know we'll be impacted in Altoona for it because we're playing Penn State recruit Mekhi Flowers in CD East Friday night. Altoona obviously is the beneficiary of being on the way to State College. Our hotels will be filled and it's a great experience, but Corey, before we end this and say goodnight to each other and And we finally get some sleep after the first home college football Saturday of the year. What's your prediction in the score for next week?
I want to see the line a little bit. It's hard for me to give a prediction. I usually try to wait. I would say I would pick Penn State probably by a touchdown. I don't know about what kind of number yet. I want to see exactly, but I think Penn State can maybe get out of this with a touchdown. I'll throw out a figure somewhere in the 31-24, 31-25 kind of range. So that's at least kind of where my mind is at this point.
I think I'm going with 37-28 for the score for Penn State to come out on top. I
that's
like
a lot of
that.
Points.
I love points, Corey. I love offense. But I think it's a really good opportunity for Penn State to come out and really show what their offense is all about. And see what happens. But I think this is going to be a good test for both teams. And I think it's going to be a great test for Penn State moving forward because, hey, guess what? This is a pretty good, you know, Auburn team. So let's see what they've got. And you go out and get that signature win at home in front of 110,000 people, if you count literally every single employee and camera guy and media person and see what happens. But, you know, it's going to be bright. It's going to be white. And it's going to be a fun time.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it, man. Can't wait.
That's it. That's all we have. That's all she wrote. For Corey Geiger, this has been Jared Prugar on the We Are Podcast and the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. We'll talk to you from Beaver Stadium in the Whiteout next week.